Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
Welcome back, American Savages, to The Savage Truth. I am your host, Cicely Davis. Ecstatic to have you join me yet again for episode 115. Oh, if you're new to the channel, I welcome you. Thank you so much for joining and taking the time to make a decision to join me to hear my perspective and to share in on the conversation. For those of you who are not new, whether you joined me last week or the week before or episode 38 or for the very first, I thank you so very much for your loyalty and joining me again. Couldn't do this without you. Wouldn't even be interested in doing this without your support. I truly, truly am genuinely grateful for your support. Now, whether you are a new joiner or someone who's been with me as a ride or die, I have an ask, and it is this: to please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube as we get into this week's haps. And as you know, with this kind of president, it will be extremely eventful for the next 4 years. But Donald Trump has yet another tally in the win space. The Department of Education in America, he is proposing to dismantle. Now, for those of you who don't know, a Department of Education was created in 1979 or 80 during the presidency of Jimmy Carter as a response to growing concerns over the state of American education and the perceived need for more federal oversight. So you can guess what side kind of had those kind of thoughts, right? The move to establish the department came after decades of increasing federal involvement in education, starting with the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965 under President Lyndon B. Johnson's Great Society program. So that already tells you what the outcome is going to be, okay? While the intention behind the creation of the Department of Education was to streamline federal education efforts and to improve the quality of education through more coordination and oversight, it was met with criticism from conservatives, rightly so, who believe that education should remain under local control. Boy, do we agree with that. And look at the outcomes. Now, Republicans argued that the creation of a federal agency would lead to unnecessary bureaucracy, which it has, inefficiencies, which it has, and a one-size-fits-all approach to education that completely ignored local needs and parental involvement. Now, over time, these concerns proved valid, more than true, as the department's growth was accompanied by mounting evidence that federal involvement had failed to improve educational outcomes, leading many conservatives to call for its abolition, rightfully so. And as a result, here we are now today in 2025. Here's a little history of the Department of Education and some statistics. Now, I was going to read off some of those stats, but here's what I'm going to do. I will let the president provide the dismal outcomes. Rick, roll the footage.
Today, we take a very historic action that was 45 years in the making. In a few moments, I will sign an executive order to begin eliminating the federal Department of Education once and for all. And it sounds strange, doesn't it? Department of Education, we're going to eliminate it. And everybody knows it's right. And the Democrats know it's right, and I hope they're going to be voting for it, because ultimately it may come before them. But everybody knows it's right, and we have to get our children educated. We're not doing well with the world of education in this country, and we haven't for a long time.
Now, that video was a little bit longer, but it absolutely needed to be heard, right? So you can understand why President Trump is working towards dismantling this unnecessary bureaucracy. So all in all, and once again, Republicans were right. We were right once again. Let's play another video, because we need to talk about the federal Department of Education and as a cornerstone, and just hear from Donald Trump what his actual intentions are. Let's listen.
When President Carter created the Federal Education Department in 1979, It was opposed by members of his own cabinet, as well as the American Federation of Teachers, the New York Times editorial board, and the famed Democrat Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. History has proven them right, absolutely right. After 45 years, the United States spends more money on education by far than any other country, and spends likewise by far more money per pupil than any country, and it's not even close. But yet, we rank near the bottom of the list in terms of success. It's an amazing stat. Those are two stats you don't want. The most money spent per pupil, and you're at the bottom of the list. And that's where we are, like it or not. And we've been there for a long time. 70% of eighth graders are not proficient in either reading or in math. 70%. 40% of fourth graders lack even basic reading skills, can't read. Students in our public elementary and middle schools score worse in reading today than when the department opened, by a lot. In Baltimore, 40% of the high schools have zero students who can do basic mathematics. Not even the very simplest of mathematics. I said, give me your definition of basic, and they're talking about like adding a few numbers together. Despite these breathtaking failures, the department's discretionary budget has exploded by 600% in a very short period of time, and it employs bureaucrats in buildings all over Washington, D.C.
Now, for decades, the Federal Department of Education has been a cornerstone of the American education system. Unfortunately, I say. However, despite its existence for over 45 years and the significant resources allocated to it, the results have been dismal, to say the least. Under the leadership of Donald Trump, the call to abolish the Federal Department of Education is a logical response to the failure of the institution in improving educational outcomes for American students. The logic behind this move is not based on opposition to education, but on the realization that federal intervention has exacerbated the very problems it was meant to solve. Trump's proposed action is an acknowledgement that local control, parental involvement, and competition can produce better results than federal oversight. Anything that the government gets involved in is doomed to fail and or be worse, right? Smaller government, local, allow the people to have say, parents to have say as to what their kids are educated in. The primary failure of the DOE is its inability to reverse the steady decline in educational achievement in America. Now, despite spending more on education than any other country on the globe, American students consistently rank poorly and global comparisons of educational achievement. According to various international assessments, such as the Program for International Student Assessment, the PISA, American students rank near the bottom, as you heard from Donald Trump, near the bottom of developed nations in terms of literacy, math, and science. This underachievement has continued for decades with little to no improvement, despite the massive federal investment in education. You can't be the greatest country on the globe and have the least literate children or the least literate pupils coming out of it. It simply doesn't line up. It doesn't make sense. The money allocated to education, both at the federal and state levels, has not translated into better educational outcomes, raising questions about the effectiveness of the DOE's role in managing these funds. Another compelling reason to abolish the DOE is the vast amount of money the U.S. spends on education with minimal returns. According to the reports from the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, oh my gosh, all these acronyms, the U.S. spends more per pupil than any other country. Yet, despite these financial commitments, American students continue to underperform when compared to their international peers. This disparity highlights a systemic issue where increasing federal funding without addressing the core issues of curriculum, teacher quality, and local autonomy has done little to improve student outcomes. The money being poured into the system has become an end in itself, without leading to real, measurable improvements in educational achievement. I mean, basically what we have is a massive bureaucracy with a lot of bureaucrats getting rich, and our children are not receiving the outcomes they deserve. The continued decline in educational achievement calls for a real value reevaluation of the role of the federal government in education. The federal DOE, while intended to ensure equality and standardization, has arguably contributed to a bloated and inefficient system. Local schools and communities, when given the opportunity to take more control over their own education systems, can absolutely adapt to the unique needs of their students, teachers, and local economies. Abolishing the DOE would return power to state and local governments, allowing them the flexibility to create education policies that are better tailored to the needs for their populations. The focus should be on empowering parents, should be on empowering teachers and local authorities, rather than relying on a distant and bureaucratic federal agency. That is why the federal DOE needs to be dismantled. I am, of course, in support of Donald Trump doing just that. And in conclusion, Donald Trump's move to abolish the federal DOE of is a logical step in addressing the failures of the American education system. After more than 45 years of federal oversight, it is clear that the department has not succeeded in its mission to improve educational achievement. It has significantly failed, right? The evidence is overwhelming. America spends more money on education than any other country, yet consistently ranks near the bottom in global comparisons. The solution is not to continue pouring more resources into an ineffective federal system, but to return that power to local governments and empower parents and educators. Education should be a local and individualized process, not a one-size-fits-all federal program. Abolishing the federal Department of Education would be a step forward to a more effective and accountable education system. Period. Now, on to the next, because, oh, Tiny Tim, Tampon Tim, Elmer Fudd, Tim Walz is still active here in Minnesota, folks. Now, he's still at it. Don't believe me? If you really don't believe me, just watch the video.
I'd love to welcome the First Lady and Governor Tim Walz to the stage.
Wow. It's Al. Al. Wow. Thank you all. Good morning, First CD. Good morning to all the folks who drove today. Those poets are wrong. You can go home. You can go back. They're wrong.
Oh, Tim Walz. Tis, tis. The governor here in Minnesota. Graced, if I could say that without laughing, graced Rochester with his presence recently. And what a spectacle it was. Apparently, Tampon Walz, Tampon Tim Walz, believes his frequent appearances in cities like Rochester are the answers to all of Minnesota's problems, which, judging by his record, is a bit like the captain of the Titanic claiming he's helping by rearranging deck chairs. He talks about economic growth and health care was nothing short of revolutionary. Now, if by revolutionary, you mean the same old recycled talking points that have done wonders for the state's budget deficit, high taxes, and all-around lack of practical solutions, I mean, it's like he's the life of the party, but shows up with the same dull anecdotes everyone's heard 1,000 times over before. Sure, his speeches are charming if you're into vague promises and platitudes, but if you're looking for actual solutions, well, good luck with that. Watch this.
Thank you for putting the values of the people of the First District as a priority and understanding that the incredible gift of this country and the blessings that it come with responsibilities. And one of those responsibilities is being engaged in your government. And you also have, you have a constitutional right to address your government for a redress of grievances, and I think we have a few grievances that we might want to bring up. But you didn't come here to complain. You came here to lift up and understand that each generation of Americans and each generation of Minnesotans and each generation of folks in southern Minnesota have a responsibility to lift up the things we care deeply about. And you came here, you love the country, you love freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom that comes with it. That is important. And now, I've been saying, I think it's very important. Everybody says they love freedom, but we need to be very clear here. If you truly love freedom, that means freedom for every one of us, not just some. Every.
So the true highlight of Walz's appearance, of course, was his ability to seamlessly ignore the obvious issues facing everyday Minnesotans, like me. Crime rates. Let's not talk about that. It's clearly not a priority. Infrastructure. Oh, right. That's probably someone else's problem. But fear not, because Tampon Tim has a plan to make sure that everyone in the state is really taken care of with more taxes, more regulations, and more government control, and ensuring that we, this state, and particularly Minneapolis, remains a sanctuary city. What could possibly go wrong? Rochester's residents were probably thrilled to hear Walz explain how working together will solve their problems. That's not the togetherness Minnesotans sign up for. What the state needs is less government overreach and more respect for local businesses and local families. But hey, if you need an expert in grandstanding and promises with zero follow through, Tampon Tim, Elmer Fudd, is your guy. Congratulations. Bravo, Tampon Tim. So not sure if you heard, but AOC and Bernie Sanders are touring the country right now. This is the far left wing of the party, of course. They're not throwing in the towel. Watch.
He's handed the keys to Elon Musk and is selling this country for parts to the richest people on the planet for a kickback. And in exchange, they will bankroll his campaigns and those of his allies. They scratch his back, he scratches theirs, and the rest of us are left behind.
So today we are here to say very loudly and clearly, no, we will not accept an oligarchic form of society where a handful of billionaires run the government.
AOC and Bernie Sanders touring swing states ahead of the midterms is the kind of political spectacle that should make Republicans sit up and take notice. Okay, this is not something we should ignore. Again, we should not ever go back. Let's not become complacent here. This is something we should definitely take seriously. While some might dismiss their efforts as just the usual progressive rhetoric, they're not just talking points to their base. They're trying to tap into the delusioned working class voters who are frustrated with the status quo. They have an ability here to focus on the recent government changes, particularly with employment from the Trump administration. And they're going to work that bone. They're going to work that nerve. AOC in particular, with her trendy populist appeal, and Bernie, the aging socialists with an unshakable conviction, are pitching their vision of a radical government takeover that promises everything from universal health care to free college. Republicans should not, under any circumstances, underestimate their ability to rally these voters, especially as inflation, job insecurity, and rising costs of living continue to toll on American families. Donald Trump will address that. I know he will. We feel confident. After all, the American people gave him a mandate. He will absolutely do everything he promised to do. But the focus right now has been government overspending and getting our borders under control. By offering simplistic solutions to complex problems, they're creating a potent narrative that Republicans will have to combat. Now, it sounds simplistic, okay? It appeals to the average person who doesn't research, but we should not become complacent. Republicans cannot afford to get complacent and rest on the assumption that their base will turn out in full force without serious competition. The progressive left has proven time and time and time again that they know how to energize voters, even in traditionally red-leaning states. AOC and Bernie's charisma combined with their radical agenda could appeal to working-class voters who feel ignored by the establishment. Now, we can take solace. We can feel confident that 73% of Americans wanted Donald Trump in, and he has an approval rating that's through the roof, and Democrats right now only have a 29% approval rating. That being said, this is no time for complacency. If Republicans want to maintain control, they need to sharpen their message, connect with voters on issues that matter to them, and present clear alternatives to the far left agenda. Stop wasting your time showing up on Gavin Newsom's show. We need to get out there as well to have an adjacent and parallel tour that's giving the American people the truth about what's going on with their tax dollars and the plans and the promises that Donald Trump made on November 5th that they are absolutely following through, and the impact and the incomes that it's having. It's not enough to just oppose what AOC and Bernie Sanders stand for. Republicans need a strong, coherent vision that speaks to the economic concerns and frustrations of everyday Americans before these left-wing efforts gain more traction than they absolutely deserve. And there is an absolute concern, or the at least for the optics of so many of these government people losing their jobs. So again, we cannot lay down. We can't become complacent. We need to stay sharp, and we need to get that message out there. Fortunately, as continued from last week, there is turmoil within the Democrat Party, as you all know, and it has reached a boiling point, and Republicans would be wise to recognize it as an opportunity. Now, with the party's approval rating at a dismal 29%, the Democrats, it's clear that the left is in full-blown panic mode. The Democrats are desperate. They are desperate for a new leader, a new voice, someone to step up and step in and rejuvenate their floundering agenda. This desperation has opened the door for figures like AOC and Bernie Sanders to emerge as the face of the party, despite their far-left views that are out of touch with many working-class voters. The infighting within the Democratic establishment is a sign, however, of a party divided. They are struggling to maintain relevance and increasingly unable to offer solutions to the issues that Americans actually care about. Republicans should seize on this weakness, staying focused on offering a steady conservative vision while the Democrats flounder around trying to find their next messiah. And that, my friends, is a savage truth. And speaking of savages, I've decided to add a little something to the show. You know, with the last presidential election and the recent failure of the Michelle Obama's podcast, it is clear that Americans are tired of celebrities chiming in on their way of life and telling them how to live, especially politically. Savage truth is, Americans want to hear from real celebrities, those who have served our country, who have laid down their life and are willing to make the ultimate sacrifice, and who have made the ultimate sacrifice. And so I would like to introduce a new segment to the show called Savage Soldiers. It's a tribute and a highlight to those who served, returning home to their loved ones and the country that loves them and the country that they've served. These are the heroes and the people we should be celebrating, and I am proud and honored to share them with you. Here's the first episode, quickly, of Savage Soldiers. please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, as always, to be bold, be strong, be faithful, be true. Till next time, I'm Cicely.
The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.